podcast. Ja.
Det klart at det busy. Ok. Okay, everybody, welcome to the first NIST lecture of 2018, and today we are so lucky to have two representatives from NTNU's unit for digital security, and that's the digital security in NTNU's operational systems, who is going to present to us their experience from their first operating year. But before, and while they are ringing their computer and stuff, Stuart Kowalski will have a word for announcing some other extracurricular activities. So Stuart, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Niels. I've mentioned this before at other NIST lectures. We will be going to Geneva. We will be competing against West Point in Oxford. There's a competition called the Cyber 9-12 Challenge. I mentioned before, I have some papers on it here. Students can apply to be part of the Norwegian Digital Border Squad and learn how to present risk to the people that have a lot of money. It's a policy type of exercise, and Galtürk, you can talk later sometimes, he was one of the ones that made the team come to such a high placing last year. He was there last year, and now he's here at NTNU protecting us. So if you have any, I have a brochure here, you can pick up the paper. And if anybody's interested to go to Geneva for 2 days and compete with some of the best security policy people in the world, we have a chance. Okay? Thank you.
Stuart had a handout, and for those who are online, you can send him an email at stuartkowalski@ntnu.no, I guess. Yes, guys. Are you... This is typical when you have the high techies doing the presentation, right? They fiddle up the system somehow, but it's that's how it is for all of us. While they're doing this, I also have to say, while they're setting this up, it's we are from NIST Lab side proud to present these two as working in NTNU Digital, as they are both products of our own education. They have done their bachelor, master, and also Gaute has his PhD from our program. So we find that pretty cool. I think you just guys, but one can start talking and one get going. So please.
Can anybody hear me? Yes. Some technical difficulties. This meeting or this presentation tools worked last time I used them, but we'll get the slides up soon. We're going to talk about defending academics from the cyber reality. The content of this lecture is a short presentation of the NTNU Digital Security section and the Security Operations Center that we are building, how we do data gathering and analysis for cybersecurity. Gert will talk a little bit about the threats we have seen in our first year and ongoing research that we are doing or collaborating in. And then we will wrap up with some conclusions. Yes, short presentation of us. We were formally established in last year, 1st of January 2017. The work started a couple of years before that, and I think the first that we can trace back to is in 2011 when we're talking about building a SOC for then Gjøvik University College. We are mainly positioned in Gjøvik, except from Gunnar on the second row, which are our man in Trondheim. We have the corporate security function for the whole of NTNU, all cities. And to this date, we are the largest investment in security in the academic sector in Norway, including our sector CERT and all the other universities. So why digital security? There is a strategy from our government and also our Kunnskaps Department. That Ministry of Education that has said that digitalization is the way to go, and there's a lot of pressure to make this into action. And with more digitalized computer systems, information security and privacy becomes issues that we have to address. Our section is under the IT department of NTNU, and is the first section in the administration that are tried out as being a decentralized organizational function. So our work is based upon supporting organization in recognizing, assessing, mitigating, and accepting cyber risk. So a little bit about the SOC, the Cyber Security Operations Center. It's built up to be the hub of all our activities in the digital security section. We are constantly monitoring the network and systems for signs of threats, and we have quite a research focus in our work because we are here in Gjøvik with a large academic community in Northern Europe, I think. And it's also one of the main reasons why it was given to Gjøvik campus to get the operational administrative perspective into the academic perspective. Other things we are doing, we are coordinating security efforts with partners and both other universities, some private companies, hopefully soon, and the sector CERT in Uninet, and then the national CERT, NORCERT. So short of our like reactive services, proactive services, and we have been doing quite a lot of security quality management lately in the form of the information security management system. So our mission is to defend and use network, devices, systems, and users against threats in cyberspace. It's to support IT operation in providing a stable, secure platform for teaching, research, innovation, dissemination of our knowledge to the world, and support administration so we can securely operate or manage the university. And writtenly, when we got formed, the written from the board was that we should enforce NTNU's written security policies, which are approved by management in the form of the ISMS. Short introduction to our ISMS, the work, it started in 2015. In the wake of the merger, we figured out that we were four institutions that need to become one, and everybody has like different ways or to go towards security work. and we started to see how we can merge this together to one ISMS. In 2016, late 19th of September, we started a pre-project to figure out how we should actually manage to do this, because we saw quite quickly that this is not a small project, it's a quite large project. So in the first quarter of in 2017 and the first quarter now in 2018, we have been designing the ISMS and soon will be put into pilot implementation. So why do we do all of this work? Here's an example. This is a website. It's an old case, of course. But this is Friday, the 25th of September 2015 at 3 o'clock. 30 minutes later, it looked like that. This is not like a isolated case. We have quite a lot of them at some points. And this is, I will come back to why this is a problem. We have had more severe cases when it comes to privacy, where infrastructure that was believed to be closed are not so closed after all. We had some awareness, security awareness issues that became quite large. And of course, we have a constant attack from DDoS types attack. And this is two cases also from 2015. They are so old, so they're nice to use, where we are receiving a DDoS into our system, and then we are actually also quite often helping to launch DDoS attacks towards others. This is last month, just DDoS statistics or attempts to use our system for DDoS or similar activities. As you can see, the range is like from around 6,000-7,000 when it's low, 5,000 when it's low, and then up to 35,000 in the day, or like 12 hours is this graph. So a little bit over to the data gathering analysis tools that we are employing to address some of these issues and to fulfill our mission. We are building a sensor network, which are essential for a lot of our operations. Cisco Advanced Malware Protection for endpoint protection, and incident data analysis for getting some of the conclusion that we'll talk more about. So our sensor networking capabilities, we use heavily network-based intrusion detection. That's because we don't have control over our endpoints. Many of them are the students, many are employees that bring their own device to work. Many is bought in by some lab or institute that they are managing themselves and putting at risk. So we cannot have control of that those systems per now, because we don't know where they are or what they are doing. We use malware sandboxes quite a lot to see, look at the files and traffic that we get in and out from the university. And recently we bought Cisco AMP for securing a lot of our endpoints. Cisco AMP is an agent which is a hybrid between endpoint protection and endpoint detection response technology. So it has a little bit of both. I will show a screenshot and talk a little bit more about that on the next slide. Except from that, we generate quite a lot of data during a 24-hour period. We needed to put that into system to be able to do analysis of it. So there we strategically chosen to go open source with Elasticsearch or the Elk stack. And the reason for this is potential academic cooperation of new development and innovation on this type of platform, some big data analysis. To be able to collect all this and being to do our analysis, we have built a small vSphere cluster down in the basement, which are for security-specific tasks like forensics tools, analysis tools, and to handle on an incident basis, which based on VMware. Yes. Here you see a screenshot of Cisco AMP with not real data. Basically, it gives us a good dashboard and insight to our endpoints where we have vulnerabilities. We can see what CVEs that are running on our endpoints. We can also see if some exploit had been run on that system and is vulnerable. It has quite a lot of intelligence. we can see what is quarantined, and then we have a list of what is compromised, where that didn't manage to quarantine, and you see over a period of time multiple events. We get this artifacts that we can use to tell us in our sensor network. So if you have an IP address, we can make a signature, then also detect on endpoints that we don't have any control over, and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'll talk a bit about my research into incident data and classification. The goal of this work was to find the key cyber risks that we are facing at NTNU according to the incident data. Well, incident data is incidents that we have had reported in, solved, and made a record of. So an incident is an event that has occurred which is related to the subject field. And for information security, we define this as a violation of confidentiality, integrity, or availability in information systems. My data set comes from the 1st of November 2016 to January 2018, so I just recently updated it. I have the data set comprises of 624 computer security incidents. So when I started working on this incident analysis, what became apparent quite early is that it has at least two parts. It has an cause and an outcome. The outcome is a consequence, relates to the consequence, and it's what's most what is reported in or observed by the victim or by somebody else. So this is the outcome is what often gets reported into us. And for quantification or classification, we have no identical events. Even if you have two compromised accounts, it's not the same account, so it's not identical. So we need some kind of a classification framework for quantification. And the cause of the attack or the cause of the incident relates back to the attack method and the vulnerability, while the outcome, the action that the threat agent does in the system, relates to the target asset, a motivation, an intent, and what kind of threat agent we're facing. So this is the incident classification system that we use. It's a bit long list of things, but it is important to understand this in order to understand what the statistics mean, what I'm going to show you later. This is the classification level 1 that we use, so the top level classification. So we have abuse at the top, which means abuse of resources, of our resources mainly, of our NTNU resources such as computational power, file sharing, etc. We have unlawful activity, which is breaking the law. Malware, which most of you know, viruses, trojans, etc. Reconnaissance, which somebody scans the network, somebody tries to find vulnerabilities, that kind of incidents. Compromised assets are compromised, our assets, for example, systems, computers, servers, etc. Compromised users, which comprises of user accounts and admin accounts. And compromised information, which is more this type information leakage, that types of things. And vulnerable assets, this is a big trigger for many incidents. We have systems that are, for example, open for abuse, misconfigured, typically vulnerable for reflexive DDoS attacks, those types of things. We have denial of service, and in this class is both ingoing and outgoing denial of service. The difference being that we are the target in ingoing DDoS, and outgoing is something that targets somebody else. Social engineering attacks, typically phishing, frauds, CEO frauds, whaling, etc. Intrusion attempts, somebody tries to hack our network, somebody tries to use an exploit. And policy violation, which is our policies, we have mainly two policies that we work within this classification. That's the IT policy, which is everybody has to sign when they start here, and the information security policy. And for everything else, that still is a information security incident, goes into the other category. And this classification is very important because it defines what the incident handling should be about. Everything that goes outside of this is dropped by the SOC because it's not our responsibility. So this defines our responsibility. And we have a level two. I'm just going to show you a brief example here. This is how we break down the different categories. So I put malware here. So you see we use these types of virus, worm, backdoor, rootkit. I know that these are not the same, but there are so few incidents that it doesn't make any sense to set them apart within this and this. So they're fairly similar with very similar consequences. So I grouped them together to make it less comprehensive or less big. There are over 50 categories in the level two example. So a brief example of an incident classification. This is typical. We get an email and it says compromised user. So it says user XX is sending a lot of email to employees. The email contains a link to a suspicious foreign IP, which is hosting a login page. This is typical. We get a lot of these. The cause here in this classification will be a compromised user, and the outcome is phishing. So that's how I classified it. So without any further ado, what you all been waiting for, cyber threats. Okay, so first I'm going to talk about some statistics, what we're currently facing, and then I'm going to go into some cases, give you some scenarios that we've had. So this is the top level causes of incidents that we're facing here at NTNU. And as you see, it's social engineering that's the primary cause of incidents. We also have compromised assets. So you see that social engineering attempts are about 180 over the last 14 months, 180 roughly, that's been reported in. There might be more, but this is what's reported in and caused an incident. Further, we have compromised assets, which are typically computers that have been taken by the threat and owned, which has been observed in some doing some malicious action inside our network. Typically, a lot of this, I'll mention that later, so just bear with me. We also have compromised users, so which I'm going to talk a lot more about later. And we have vulnerable assets. Like I mentioned earlier, we have typically misconfigured, lack of patching, etc. We have a very diverse network here at NTNU, built a bit ad hoc by adding what you need when you need it, and no grand scheme of things for building it. And we have a lot of other categories. So this is the distribution, and here is the trend. I know this looks like a spaghetti rainbow chart, but there are some interesting trends here. First of all, we just have to do this first one here, this one, because this one kind of stands out, and if I don't mention it, it will be asked about. So this is mostly seeding torrents and illegal file sharing from the student housing. So this one dropped from our incident chart when we moved them out of our jurisdiction. Yeah. So that's one right there. And we also have this one, which is the social engineering. As you see, it's kind of, we have some attempts that's fairly, you know, stable, with the peak in about February, March, and then it goes like this, and then it drops during July because the attacker also needs summer vacation, and then it goes back up. So we have some interesting trends here. Not going to go that much more into this. Moving on, at the level two. this is what the level 2 statistics looks like for the top 10 causes of incidents. So we see we have phishing. Phishing is our primary risk, or at least the most frequent risk. System compromise is the category that we use for systems that has been compromised, but we don't really know the cause. We don't know what compromised them. So then it's grouped in here. We've seen that the system is compromised, and we've observed the malicious action, for example, a Trojan calling home to the botnet owner, for example. So we group that in this group. And we have the regular users. We have 93 during the last 14 months, roughly. Breaches to IT policy, like I just mentioned. And systems open for abuse. A lot of spamming going on inside our network. We have had 20 veiling and CEO fraud attempts the last year. And several Trojan, okay. So misconfiguration and vulnerable software is also causes of incidents, frequent causes of incidents. So here are the outcomes, the observable outcomes. And the big one to the right here, to your right, is where we fixed the attack and we didn't see any adverse outcomes. So for example, if somebody sends a phishing email to us, or somebody reports a phishing email, and then we fix it and nobody reports that their account has been lost, we haven't observed any accounts being lost, so we can't really determine. So if something malicious happened, so we group it here. So vulnerable software that was patched without us knowing it being exploited, it's grouped over here. These kinds of things. So that's why this one is the biggest for us. But we have a lot of abuse. I'm going to dig a bit deeper into that later. We have the whole span here. We have unlawful activity, malware. This is quite diverse what we're facing, the threat picture or threat landscape at the moment. And what is interesting is that when I started going through this data, I was going through it, and there was DDoS almost every day. And I thought, are we being DDoSed every day? And then I started reading through the reports, and I realized that, no, we are DDoSing others. So somebody is exploiting our vulnerable resources, or they're using reflexive DDoS attacks, etc. So that was kind of a bummer. Yeah. So moving on, like I said, we had most of it, we think, we fixed. DDoS outgoing, we have 61 of those that caused incidents. And I think this is a weird one, the spam one, because in a lot of the compromised accounts, somebody compromises account and starts spamming. And I think that's kind of a weird thing to do also with Trojans. Get a Trojan into our network and it starts spamming. So I haven't quite figured out what that means yet, but just maybe it's just the financial economic motivation that governs it. So we have also have copyright violations and Trojans, misuse of company resources. So this is kind of typical cyber threats that we're facing, and they're very, regular. But there's also one thing that one should consider is that the phishing attempts versus us are getting quite good. So here is a phishing attempt from a couple of months ago. So spot the real one. Anybody know? Yes. They screwed up this one and that one. But almost. They almost got it. So that's quite good. So and here I took this in because I think that this is what most people focus on when they focus on working with information security. This is more of the highly technical risks. We talk about the ransomware, and we talk about viruses, hacking tools, system compromise, backdoors and rootkits, DNS hijacks, application compromises, etc. We have those, but they're not very frequent. So that's something to notice. So moving on to some case studies. Raspberry Pi. Every time a Raspberry Pi gets hooked into our network, it gets taken within minutes. Our network is continuously scanned, and if you don't change the password on this one, it will be taken immediately, and within minutes it will start SSH scanning and it will start trying to brute force. So we have multiple incidents. We have about 40, 50 incidents of this the last year. So that's the Raspberry Pi, and this is the Internet of Things. It's how we view it. So moving on, we had a big data dump called Exploit In. I think it was in December, where 20 gigabytes of usernames and passwords were compromised and gathered into this big database, and everybody could download it. I downloaded it. Hans Åge, one of our colleagues, he has gone through this whole database and tried to find all the accounts affiliated with NTNU. Previously Gjøvik, Ålesund, and Hist, and try to gather all the accounts and passwords that were compromised. And I wonder how many. And I asked my girlfriend, and she said 70%. And I said, no, not even close. But 5,415. That's 451 on average per year. And that averages over one per day of user accounts being compromised. So that's over the last 12 years. Hans Åge found 101 still active, and he had to contact every one of them and ask them to change their password. So that's a nice job to have there. Moving on, we also got this one. I'll give you some time to read this, and talk about it later. So this was a big eye-opener for me, at least, is that our account is actually a commodity in Iranian forums and Iranian web pages. So that's kind of an incentive to start looking into this issue of compromised accounts. So what is really the market of compromised accounts? So Brian Krebs, he wrote a blog post on this recently, and he found this page on the dark web where they're actually trading credentials, and you can. And I looked for NTNU accounts here, but there weren't any. Thankfully, there weren't any. But you can buy, and for example, an Airbnb account for what, $15, and you can book a room as somebody else. And there are a lot of accounts, and fairly cheap. But your credit rating, the credit rating of the account holder, actually determines how much it's worth and how many are available, etc. So this is governed by a market. So that's something to consider for the account. Digging into our incidents, we have for the incident reports, we have 96 total incidents that has been caused by compromised users. And this is the distribution of how they've been exploited. So we have a misuse of resources. I'll tell you what that means. That means, or the most severe case of this, and this is what happens most frequently, is that somebody compromises an account, they use the VPN, and they connect to our servers and get our IP range, and then they mine publication or publishers' websites for publication articles. One of these articles costs about $30, and they mine about 1,000 before they get caught. So that's a heist of, what, $30,000 before they get caught, and this has happened many times. And that's one consequence. The consequence is the money that they actually make from this. But the other consequence is that for us, sometimes the publisher blocks our whole IP range, and nobody gets to access this before it actually is fixed, the problem. And this happened many times, especially this summer, we had this problem. But you also see that they use this compromised account for phishing, whaling, brute force. So the span is quite wide here. And lastly, the cyber reality for NTNU employees. These are common attacks on your left here. And these are assets that I think they're after when they're doing these attacks. So you see that we have a lot of assets, and it's money, user account, resources, identities, etc., that they're mostly after. They're also after our resources for bandwidth, storage, and abuse, and computing power, for example, for mining bitcoins. That has also happened a couple of times. And systems, resources, data, and we've also have many instances of us being a stepping stone for other types of attacks, where threat agents, they establish a foothold within our system, and then they start attacking others from our system, especially, for example, we don't have, can't give examples there, but, for example, our traffic from our network looks legitimate. So it won't be as easy to discover, for example, for NSM. So we're quite a valuable target in that sense as well. So Christopher will wrap this up with the sensor data.
I can also mention we have been used quite a lot as landing page for exploits kits in a period where that was cool in the underground world. Find some nice websites, especially WordPress or DokuWiki in those sites, and then use those as landing pages for their infrastructure, and then redirecting. Of course, then it's hidden from us. So if you come from NTNU network, you will not see anything. But if you come from Google with a referral address, for instance, you have yet served a payload if you're vulnerable. But enough about that. You have some accounts compromised. This is the data for roughly 1 month in login attempts towards our infrastructure. If you take, this is from internet, not internal in our network, just what traverses our routers for internet. So if you think about all employees and students, and they miss the password 2 times in a day, it will still just be 70,000 to 100,000 that we can take out from that number. The rest is attempts to use credentials to get into our network to use our resources. I'm going to talk a little bit to round off about how we see our placement. We are placed here because of the proximity to the research within cybersecurity, CCIS, Nordisys, and all of this. And currently, we are quite heavy in providing bachelor projects and theses. Now we have 4 bachelor projects that we have given for this semester. One is about profiling for open source threat intelligence, where we have given some students a task of see what they can find of us using public resources. That should be interesting. Last time I did that myself, it was quite fun. We also have given a project for looking at root cause analysis for incidents and stuff like that to a bachelor group. Consequence and of unrecorded incidents. We are pretty sure that we have a lot of numbers that are not recorded here. Since we are still in a building phase of our capabilities, and I'm pretty sure that not everything that is even known in the university has been reported to us the last year, because we see more in our sensors that state that the numbers probably have some gaps. And of course, GDPR, it's coming soon. So we have given a project to look at GDPR and when it comes to identity management. I see that one bachelor project is actually missing. We also gave a topic to a student to look at building the support for Yara rules into Suricata Network Security Monitor so we can use virus signatures on our network sensors. Also given one master thesis this year about passive TLS analysis to find malicious traffic in encrypted data, only using metadata to use machine learning and big data analysis to see if you can actually distinguish what is malicious and not, just looking at the metadata. And of course, Gaute here is teaching a class in risk and security management. We will provide some projects for students there too, real projects, to give them some experience. We have had good experience with this in the past to give the students something real to work with. Is, you know, here's the book, it works when you're on paper. Here's the real case, you don't have the data you think you have, so you have to be creative. And of course, you have to talk to people. That's often challenging. Gaute made a nice model of how to approach people there. So, possibilities for collaboration. We have a lot of issues that we need to resolve, as I'm sure many of other security departments have. It's a pretty much open topic for research, many of the ways that we are going in these days, and big data is of course one of them. We have a lot of data. Just our sensor nodes produced, until we could put them in Elasticsearch and actually look at them, we didn't manage to look at the alarms even because there's so many alarms during 24 hours. So, big data analysis of the sensor network, threat detection, how to detect threats, because we often don't see what is on the endpoint, we only see the footprint in the network. And how can we better figure out what is actually happening without taking control over some private equipment that the student connects to our network, because we don't want to do that. Cyber threat intelligence to support intrusion detection in general, and to what Gaute has been working on, to look what is the actual threats and the threat modeling of, you know, us as academia. Incident management and digital forensics, data collection, at least digital forensics data collection in our network is sometimes really challenging. It's distributed quite over half of Norway, we can say, and is usually quite a lot of data. So to handle this data and to be able to look at it can be challenging sometimes. Security governance, we are now implementing the ISMS project, and this will probably raise new issues that we don't foresee right now, but I'm pretty sure implementing this in the organization over the next 5 years will raise issues and potential collaboration for research. Security operation, how to build a SOC, for instance, and there we come up to the top one that I saved, CyberRange. We see a CyberRange as a potential way of testing out new best practices and mirroring our operations and trying out things in a research environment based on what we do on the operational side. So that collaboration there could be really beneficial for us. Risk assessment and management, of course, threat modeling and all of that. So there's a lot of room for collaboration here, I think. So to the last slide of the day, then the new cyber reality. Well, we are an open academic network. We have issues that don't exist in private industry at all because they have firewalls and stuff, cool stuff like that. They also usually have control over the endpoints and servers that are spread around their network. We have servers standing under some professor's desk in some corner of Gløshaugen or whatever that he put up sometime and then is staying there completely open on the internet, and you don't always see them before they get compromised. So we have a complex network to defend in that terms. And we are academia, we should be open, so it should be like this, but we should find better ways of controlling that. We have a variety of assets. We have high-performance computing resources. We have resources, as the guy mentioned. We have access to databases of articles and stuff like that. So we have a variety of assets, and just our computer systems themselves are interesting, you know, because you can use them for Bitcoin mining, or you can use them as stepping stones, proxies, or exploit kit landing pages, stuff like that. And of course, you, NTNU, all employee students, have a role to play. Because if we don't know about the issues, we cannot address them. And it's we cannot go and look at everybody's computer, and we don't want to look at everybody's computer, but then you need to help us to figure out what we need to do. Of course, as the statistics say, you are the easiest target, usually through phishing email that is used as an attack vector to get into the network, and we don't think that will change this year. So, and of course you have more assets than you realize, you know, that computer that you bought for do some GPU computation is actually quite valuable in the dark market. Just your credentials are valuable in the dark market. You know, access that you might have in research projects is valuable on the dark market or in as a commodity. So you have more assets than you think. And of course, suck it up, report the incidents so we can start addressing them. Thank you.
Thank you, Gautam Kristoffer. We open up for questions, and as always, there's some prizes. This time it's for best student question, as well. That's a regular one. And then it will be for best partner question, because we had the partners from opening up the cyber range this morning, and of course we have to challenge them. So, fire away.
Okay. Storm Landåsen, Intelligence Officer, Telenor Norway. I've got two questions for you guys. I'm very glad that you point out phishing social engineering in your description of the landscape out there. So tell me, what about physical social engineering? How do you connect that to the technical social engineering that you have been describing here? And how does that affect NTNU, what you know about it? That's one question. And question number two, who are the threat actors you are up against, and what are their intentions?
Do you want to answer the first one?
The first one about physical social engineering. Well, I tested it myself when we merged. Yeah. I was walking for some months without access card and got into almost everywhere I wanted. But I will say we don't have data to make a conclusion about that, because it's also a variety of where you are. For instance, here in our offices in the A building, you need to have an access card to get almost everywhere after closing hours by design. But I also know about places where everything is open as long as you're inside of the building. It depends on where you are. So I don't think we can say, like, generalize that everything is bad or everything is good. We need to collect more data on this. And this is a responsibility that also goes over to another department of NTNU that we need to cooperate closer to figure out this.
Yeah, and we've had incidents of face-to-face social engineering, etc. So we had incidents of those, but I don't think we can go into those. Regarding the threat landscape or the threat actors we're facing, primarily now I think it's computer criminals and looking to make money off our network. For example, we also seen more Bitcoin mining, cryptocurrency mining going on. So that's a trend that's probably coming. We see credentials being stolen, and this spam and phishing for more information, phishing for credit cards. Those are the primary threats, actually. So that we see the more advanced ones, we've seen threats from the world. We've seen traces of them as well inside the network, but like I said, they're more advanced and harder to track, and we're still just been a SOC for 1 year, so we're working on building the capacity to hunt them down. But do you want to fill out any more on that?
We have seen traces, but not non-conclusive.
Non-conclusive, yes.
I then serve you an invitation to come and meet our SOC and search and how we fight the APTs.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks.
Hello, Gerulov from Cyber Defense. I can't leave Storm alone in the competition for the cup. I have a simple question, and that's two words. So what? You presented a lot of data. A lot of it goes against the individuals. But what does this mean for NTNU as an organization? And Gunnar Bovin was here today. Why would he care? So what?
Why would he care? Because he's losing money. That's the first, that's actually the right answer. He's losing money here. If we have a lot of these, for example, these misuse cases that I mentioned, those are quite expensive, and it's not just the monetary loss that you experience while they're downloading material. It's also that we get shut out of this. We were shut out for what, 3-4 days from one publication publishing channel.
Yeah.
For a long time, and that actually prevents a lot of researchers from doing their job. So that's one. And we also have the DDoS. If we lose the internet connection for a long time, for example, that will prevent the production. And these types of issues. Yeah. And he was fished himself, so I know he cared.
He even blogged about it.
So. Yeah, he blogged about it, so it's okay for me to say it. I didn't reveal anything.
I can supplement with cooperation. Like we do a lot of research in natural sciences, information security, technology. A lot of this research is under export control. And we can also mention that the third floor of every building in St. Olav's Hospital in Trondheim is NTNU. So we have close integration and connection to HEMIT, the health network. And there also we have a good cooperation with HelseCert and the health cert. For future cooperation, it's an issue that needs to be addressed, because we can, and also with the new legislation coming now, if we don't have information security and defense in place, we will not be allowed to process personal information. So we are not allowed to have employees, students, we are not allowed to do health research, and a lot of other issues that will be devastating for the university as an organization.
And we also have critical infrastructure,
yes,
for the computing the weather, so that computers is in Trondheim, so that's defined as critical infrastructure. So if that goes down, a lot of, for example, fishing boats will be more or less blind.
So and need to get the data from Sweden.
Yeah, and that's unreliable. No. Both.
Hi. Hi. First of all, sorry for making it late for attending your presentation today. I hope you have not answered already my questions. And also, since I'm seeing this slide now, I hope my details and assets are not on any blacklist you own or something like that. Okay, my questions. The first one, it's almost related to the question posed before. Because I'm a little interested in demographics, so maybe about these attacks that you have talked in this presentation, do you have any more detailed information about that? So, for example, where did they come from or something like that?
Not that much, no.
I can say a little bit about that. We have data, but I wouldn't trust it for attribution.
Yeah.
Because it's quite easy to proxy around the world, and a lot of the IPs that are attacking us are IPs from data centers like Azure and DigitalOcean and stuff like that. And they also come, a lot of attacks come from hosting providers that are hiding the identity of the attacker. So sometimes it actually comes from ISPs and client networks. But I wouldn't still not attribute based on that, because that computer might be compromised.
Yeah, so. And also the Trojan callbacks are just to command and control, so it wouldn't, yeah.
I see we have more questions, but unfortunately, that was a very, well, just because I have already rejected the postdocs, but since you're a partner, you can have a short one. Okay.
He wants a cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Tore Ordeløkken, I'm the Chief Security Officer at EVRY. Of course, I had all the questions written down, but they asked them first. I have a couple small questions. A little bit about the physical security. And do you have any statistic over stolen laptops or PCs?
Yes, we have statistics over that for when they have been recorded as incidents. We have that, yeah, but it's not very good.
No, because that is also one way to get information from the threat actors.
Yeah.
The last question is, you have a lot of security measures. You haven't described SSL decryption. Maybe you have it or will think about it. In all these security measures, you need a discussion with the union, its laws and regulations, how you do it. How do you sort this out with the management and the unions to get all these security measures in place?
Right now we're waiting for the new hired position for privacy in NTNU to get them to sit down and go through our systems to see the, if she or he agree. I don't remember who they hired. But usually we are using the checkpoint, would I care? Because we are quite privacy-aware people, so would I care about this if this was done the other way around? And use as a check, and you also discuss it when it comes to privacy-related issues. But then, of course, you have the issue, privacy versus security. You cannot have privacy without security, and security can often go over the privacy issues. So if you don't know that our credentials or like our user database or our employee database is stolen, how can we do something about it? So there's a balance there, and luckily for us, it's not we that will take that that discussion later. It will be the personvernemnd in the GDPR.
Okay. I won't keep you on the bench much longer for the competition, since there was no real student question. I mean, postdocs are outside category there, and since Geir Olav is not really external, since he is halfway internal, I think we have two winners, the two gentlemen on the front here who have their cups afterwards, and we thank Christopher and Gaute for their talk. Thank you again.
Hva skal vi ikke ha den?